Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I love the Raiders, and most of all, I love to win.
There's been one demand, and that's holding up that Lombardi Trophy, period. That's all I care about, is holding that trophy up, and holding that trophy up here.
The prime thing is you have to win. You have to win. Otherwise, you can't be a success in professional football.
You're listening to The State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. The presenting sponsor for today's episode of State of the Nation is Visa, a network working for everyone. I'm Jimmy Durkin. We've got Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, Ted Nguyen, getting you set for the Raiders at 3-0, taking on the Los Angeles Chargers down in L.A. And to help us do that, we've got our Chargers beat writer, Daniel Popper. Check out all of his work here at the Athletic. Pop, how you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, Monday Night Football in L.A., I think should be a fun environment. Obviously, Raiders fans are probably going to fill that place up pretty well. I know Raider fans always expect that that L.A. is essentially another home game for them with all their history there. The Chargers are coming off of an impressive win. They went to Arrowhead, and they really were able to slow down that Chiefs passing attack. They were able to prevent Patrick Mahomes from getting out of the pocket and making big plays. They're close to being a 3-0 team. Obviously, they lost to the Cowboys, but just what do you make of the Chargers so far? As we sit here and, you know, 3 weeks in, and the Chiefs are in last place in the AFC West, and we've got three other teams playing really well.
Yeah, I think so far they've proven that they're a really solid team. I don't know if I would go as far as to say that they're great or have solidified themselves as a playoff contender, just because there are some holes in the roster, some holes in how they play. That have sort of jumped out early on. But when you go into Arrowhead and win the way that they did, to have the kind of defensive game plan they did and to execute it at the level they did, that's obviously really impressive. Penalties have been a bit of an issue here through the first 3 weeks. They've had two touchdowns called back for illegal shifts. Obviously, Joe Lombardi bringing that offense over from the Saints. There's a ton of motion involved in there, and they're still ironing some things out. But when you have the quarterback, everything else becomes really easy. And number 10, Justin Herbert, is the real deal. And I only think he's going to get better as he moves forward, learns more about what defenses are trying to do against him, and gets more comfortable in the scheme, gets more comfortable with the offensive line in front of him, obviously, four new starters up there. So a ton of talent. Brandon Staley's doing an excellent job, but I still think they have a little bit of a ways to go before they really cement themselves as, you know, that kind of contender everyone is talking about them like.
And for me, the biggest surprise with the Raiders is their depth. I thought that wasn't very good, but obviously it stepped up. What's the biggest surprise for you so far with the Chargers?
I think it's how fast this offensive line has come together, particularly in the running game. You know, like I mentioned, four new starters, obviously left tackle Rashawn Slater, the first round pick. They signed two new guards in free agency, a new center in free agency in Corey Linsley. Brian Bulaga was the only returning starter. He's already on IR with a back injury, and Storm Norton is there. He barely played last year. So it's a brand new offensive line, and the run blocking has looked really solid. I know they're not running the ball a lot. Who would run the ball a lot when you have Justin Herbert and these passing weapons? But when they have ran the ball, it's been really connected. And I think that sort of starts with Corey Linsley, who's an all-pro center. But Rashawn Slater is the real deal. And they are running behind the left side of their line with Rashawn Slater, Matt Filer, and Corey Linsley. And they're opening up a ton of holes. And it's really a credit to Corey Linsley, who's sort of bringing that whole group together. And then obviously you got to give credit to Frank Smith, offensive line coach, former Raiders coach there, who's done a great job coaching that group. And then assistant offensive line coach Sean Surratt, who they brought over from the Steelers. I mean, it was a priority this offseason. Their offensive line has been a disaster the previous two seasons, largely because of injuries. General manager Tom Telesco goes out and overhauls the whole group, and they're really coming together. And you only expect it to improve as they play more together. So that's really what surprised me so far.
I know things have gone pretty well for their defense overall. Something that kind of jumped out to me was a run defense. I know, obviously, you know, Staley is known for stopping the pass first. Is that something that they just don't care about, or is that still a concern for them?
Yeah, particularly in that Chiefs game, they were tempting the Chiefs to run. It was bait. Like, they were like, we're going to put this light box in front of you. We're going to play, put a roof over the coverage and, like, run the ball 5-6 yards every play. Because in their mind, they were saying, okay, if it takes you, if it takes Patrick Mahomes 12 plays and 7 minutes to score a touchdown, like, that's a win. You know, they're trying to avoid the knockout punches. And I wrote this in the film review. Basically, they're like, we'll take the jabs. We'll take the body blows as long as we can avoid that knockout punch. And they were able to do that. Now, against the Cowboys was a little bit of a different story. I think they wanted to play better against the run. They knew the Cowboys were going to come in there and try and run the football against them with Zach Martin coming back off the COVID list. And they did not do a good enough job there. Jerry Tillery got manhandled. I didn't think Linval Joseph played a very good game. So the run defense is a concern. But in their mind, like, if they can prevent the explosive passes, they're going to give themselves a chance to win with how much talent they have on offense. But I think it will lead to a loss at some point. Now, what I'll add here is that they've been missing Justin Jones. He's one of their better run defenders, and he's been out with a calf injury that he suffered in that first week. And that's been an issue because Jerry Tillery is being forced to take on a ton of double teams, and he's just not strong enough, not good enough in the run front to take on as many double teams as he's taking on. So Justin Jones will be back this week. With him back in there, I think the run defense will improve. But you're looking at, like, down the road, they go up against the Ravens. They go up against the Browns. They're going to have to stop the run at some point. They're not just going to keep going up against these explosive passing offenses. I think at some point it's going to come back to bite them. So I think that's a really good point.
Last year, Justin Herbert exploited a really bad Raiders secondary that blew a ton of coverages. I think the secondary is a little more solid this year. But even then, I think the only way to really stop Justin Herbert is pressuring with four. And you said Brian Bulaga is on IR right now. How is Storm Norton holding up? And how do you see the matchup with him and possibly Max Crosby or Ngakoue going?
It's been really up and down. You know, he went out in that Washington game and replaced Brian Bulaga in the second half and, like, performed really well against Chase Young and Montez Sweat. He gave up the one sack fumble, which probably wasn't really a sack fumble, but that was really the only glaringly bad rep of the game. Then he goes out against the Cowboys. They put Micah Parsons at defensive end, and it's a disaster. I mean, he gives up 9 pressures and he looks completely lost out there. Now, what they would tell you is, well, Micah Parsons had no tape out there. He had nothing to study in terms of, you know, pass rush game plan, moves, any of that stuff. That to me seems like an excuse. It just seemed like he didn't have a very good game. Comes out in week 3 and goes up against Chris Jones on a number of snaps and, like, holds his own, gives up 1 pressure, but Justin Herbert, who's fantastic under pressure, hits Mike Williams for that 20-yard touchdown on the right sideline. So it ended up not leading to a negative play. You're just looking for more consistency from him. I think it's a really big step that he showed that kind of response after the type of game he had against Micah Parsons. But if there is a weak point on this offensive line, it is at right tackle. They gave him a ton of help in that game. And I think that's what they're going to do moving forward. Just a lot of chip help from running backs. They'll put Jared Cook over there and chip with a tight end. They'll chip with Gabe Neighbors, the fullback, just to give him help and give him some breaks. But Max Crosby's playing at a super high level, man. Like, I love him. I think he's a fantastic player. And so that's absolutely a matchup to watch. Like, will Storm Norton show up? Which version of him will show up, right? The one in the Cowboys game who got abused by Micah Parsons, or the one who can go toe-to-toe with Chase Young and Chris Jones?
I wonder if he struggles with speed more than power.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. And, you know, because Micah Parsons is a freak athlete, just so twitchy. And I think he had some trouble there and, you know, did better against Chris Jones, who's obviously, like, a bigger body, more powerful. So I think that's a good observation.
Everybody knows about Keenan Allen, and we know about that connection with Justin Herbert. You wrote a great story a few weeks ago about that. But Mike Williams, I mean, here's a guy that was a top 10 pick, high expectations, and you've just been kind of waiting for this guy to emerge. And through 3 games, you especially saw him, what he did against the Chiefs. I mean, it looks like they don't just have, you know, Herbert and Allen. They've got Herbert, Allen, and Mike Williams now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was the vision, right? You spend the 7th overall pick on a wide receiver. The vision is that he becomes a superstar. A lot of it was injuries. Like, he battled a lot of injuries early on in his career. He had a back thing. He had a knee thing. It just prevented him from being, you know, the type of player that they expected. But some of it is usage. Some of it is a coaching staff having the vision for a player and seeing the talent and saying, okay, we're going to lean into this. The previous coaching staff did not do that. Mike Williams was basically a 50-50 ball guy down the field. But Brandon Staley remembers Mike Williams playing against Alabama when he was at Clemson. He's talking to us about this on Monday. You know, he remembers Mike Williams making that leaping catch down the sideline in the 4th quarter against the Broncos when Staley was the outside linebackers coach there. And he, when he takes this job, says, I remember all this, and I know Mike Williams can be one of the best receivers in football. So instead of just making him a go route guy, let's add a bunch of slants to his game. Let's make him a focal point of the offense. Let's put him at X. Let's incorporate him into the RPO game with advantage looks. If we see him one-on-one, we're going to throw him the football. And that vision, and then it's also telling Mike Williams, listen, we have the confidence in you to be this type of player. And so you combine all that together, and then Justin Herbert on top of that saying this offseason, like, we need to get Mike the ball more, period. And I mean, he told me that when I sat down with him. He said it in press conferences. Like, he's like, this guy is too talented to not be a factor in the short and intermediate area of the field. And that's what you're seeing. It's a quarterback who wants to get him the football, and it's a coaching staff that has the vision to make him a focal point of the offense. And there's very few corners in the league that can guard him on a slant route one-on-one. He's just too big. He's 6'4", 220. And I think you're seeing his route running come to life and seeing him operate in that short and intermediate area of the field in a way that he just hadn't in previous offenses with the Chargers.
Why didn't you tell us this before our fantasy drafts?
I was tweeting about it because Joe Lombardi, like when he first took the job and he did his one of his first press conferences, he's like, yeah, so Mike Williams is going to be playing the Michael Thomas role. And if I was a betting man, I'd bet on him having a huge statistical season. So I tweeted that quote out. Everyone should have gone straight to the books and bet the over on Mike Williams receiving yards.
Last thing I had, I saw something that kind of jumped out to me in the Chiefs game was just how aggressive Staley was, particularly on offense, you know, going for touchdowns late in the game. I know some of that had to do with the wind and some of the conditions there, but that's something from, as somebody from that Fangio tree, he's usually a pretty conservative guy. This is really our first time seeing Staley kind of having complete control like this. You know, where does that kind of aggressiveness come from? Is that something that's been consistent with him, or was it just kind of particular to that game?
I think you bring up some important context that's sort of been lost in the conversation around that 4th-and-9 decision. Like, the wind was vicious. Like, you go watch the tape and you will just see like streamers and napkins just moving all over the camera. Like, it was 20-mile-per-hour winds cutting across the field. They basically have a rookie kicker in Tristan Vizcaino. He'd already missed 2 extra points in the game. Like, they weren't going to throw him out there and be like, all right, we're going to trust this rookie kicker to, again, in one of the biggest games of the season. Like, they're like, okay, we'd rather trust Justin Herbert, our best player. So that's been lost a little bit. But I think at the same time, he is going to be a very aggressive coach. Like, this is an analytically minded guy. And I think this was a really key moment for him, because in his intro press conference and all throughout the spring and summer, like, I'm asking him about, okay, like, what's the analytics staff look like? I know you want to, you know, he said they wanted to bolster it. They added a new analytics employee that they hired from UVA, 22-year-old kid. So he put his money where his mouth is in that sense. But my caveat was always, okay, you can say that you like analytics. You can say that you're going to model win probability. You can say that you're going to lean into the numbers. That's all great to say in a press conference. You're saying what everyone wants to hear. But what's going to happen when you say, when you face a 4th-and-4 in the fourth quarter against the Chiefs? What are you going to do in that situation? And I think he proved that he really believes in this, that he's going to be aggressive. And I think it's not that complex of an idea, right? He knows that Justin Herbert is his best player. And so he's going to live and die by Justin Herbert. Why wouldn't you do that? Like, it's not, you don't have to like pour into the numbers and look over win probability models. Like, it boils down to that simple fact. This is our best player, and we are going to either win with him or lose with him. And I think that's a really sound decision-making process.
All right, Pop, man, we really appreciate your time. We're looking forward to Monday night. It's going to be a fun one down in L.A., bright lights and everything, and we'll see who can emerge. I mean, the AFC West is tight. Like we said, the Chiefs are in last place through 3 weeks, and they've got some work to do, but whoever wins this game will be in pretty good shape after 4 weeks. So we'll look forward to seeing that one on Monday.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right. Well, I mean, this is a big game. We know it. The Chargers, they're going to have momentum coming off of that impressive win over the Chiefs. And, one thing that Daniel wrote in a film review that was interesting is how much they varied from what their defense had been in the previous two games when they faced the Chiefs. I think they went into man coverage like four times as much against the Chiefs and went 68.4% of their snaps against the Chiefs were in man coverage after only going for like 18% throughout. This is a Chargers defense that, people do, they have an idea of the kind of stuff that the Staley and Fangio defenses like to run, but it's going to be a good challenge for the Raiders, who have a passing game that's really rolling right now. And we'll see, as Popper mentioned, against the Chiefs, they dared Kansas City to run the ball. The Raiders have not run the ball well, but they are a team. They have a coach that does like to run the ball. If they get Josh Jacobs back, it'll be interesting to see if they can get that running game going.
Yeah, I think we've seen John Gruden do a nice job this year with the play calling. Last week he used motion a lot to beat the man coverage Dolphins had. So I'm sure he'll be ready for man or zone. And like you said, he wants to run the ball. I think it's surprising a little bit, that he's chosen to go with Peyton Barber over Kenyon Drake, but Peyton's done a good job in the pass protection. And I just think he's more of an inside runner than Kenyon is. So ideally for him, Josh Jacobs is back this week. He practiced yesterday. So I imagine they will lean on the running game a lot more than they have so far this season.
Yeah, I think, I don't want to say they should establish the run or kind of the old school kind of approach or, get overly, into it if it's not working. But I definitely think it's important for them to make that a part of their offense this week just because of the nature of their Chargers defense with a lot of too high safety looks. They kind of limit a lot of those explosive passing plays that the Raiders have kind of been living off of in these first three games. And so I know Derek Carr, he hasn't been concerned about his completion percentage this year. And, they've kind of had some inefficient starts so far this season, but, I think they can maybe fall into a trap of having more mistakes this game, more turnovers, or not hooking up on those deep shots as often just because of the nature of the Chargers defense. And so I think to keep them honest a little bit, they kind of have to, if those 5 or 6 yard gains are there, you kind of have to take those. And I know it worked out for them against the Chiefs, but, I don't think you can get away from that too much in this game.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the Raiders have been the opposite of what they have been in the past. They, like you said, they've lived off those explosive gains. This defense is built to limit explosive gains. So really, Derek Carr and the Raiders can go back to what, they're comfortable with. They could go to the short passing game, hit Darren Waller on those choice routes and just drive down the field and take what the defense gives you. But I also wonder if Staley is willing to take more chances if the Raiders keep taking those 5-6 yard games and if they could run the ball against this front, which I think they should be able to, especially if Josh Jacobs gets back too, they might force an adjustment. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. And the way the Raiders have been playing, they kind of attack you with different styles of play, which is going to benefit them going against this style of defense that could kind of evolve game to game.
Here's one area where we're not going to get into criticizing free agency moves and all that kind of stuff when the team's 3-0. But if we want to talk about why we were skeptical of the Kenyon Drake signing, this is part of it that, and not even necessarily an issue with Kenyon Drake, even though, the fact that they had to take him out of the game and bring in Peyton Barber because he was struggling with pass protection is a concern. But that's kind of the idea, is that backup running backs usually can be had and can be found. And you're seeing right now that, they spent all that money on Kenyon Drake, and when Josh Jacobs gets hurt, it's a guy that they grabbed off of a practice squad that they're able to plug in there as a starter.
We joked about it last week. The Raiders are so good now. You use first round picks and free agent signings for depth. It's all about depth, quality depth. But obviously that I'm sure they figured Drake would be a little better than he has been so far. Again, this team is weird. Guys who don't step up to the roles you're supposed to fill, other guys do. And Peyton Barber's a guy who, off the practice squad in Washington, bounced around a little bit, was worried about his you know future in the league when he got, when it happened, when the Washington cut him and re-signed him, but been really, really good. I mean, he's a guy who's kind of like, the more carries he's gotten as the game's gone on, the better he's gotten, which is what you want in that kind of running back. So for the Raiders, it all works out this year.
They know how to gamble. They're in Vegas now. They just double up. They get two guys in the same position, and one of them works out, and the other one doesn't.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about Derek Carr. Obviously, the AFC Offensive Player of the Month. He leads the NFL in passing yards, averaging 400 yards a game. You know, and he talked about it, that it doesn't really mean anything, and he's right. I mean, an award for the first month of the season is pretty meaningless, but he is throwing the ball deep a lot more. Our buddy Josh had the stat, 8.1 attempts, I think, per game of 20 yards or more, which is like basically double what his career average has been. The surprising thing is that his lowest ever number, I think, was 3.6 attempts per game in 2016 when he was MVP candidate. I mean, and if you have a Henry Ruggs, if you have a Darren Waller, if you have these kind of players, you should be attempting these deep passes, and they are.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of out of necessity just because you know, some of the injuries that they had up front and Jacobs being out. Up until last week, they hadn't had much success running the ball. And if you can't run and you're just dumping off a bunch of short passes, that makes it pretty easy for the defense to key in on what you're doing there. And so all the other options to start chucking it, really, and throw a bunch of times and spread it out all over the field. But, you know, obviously, you know, some of these rates may not be, I don't think they're sustainable for, you know, a 17-game season, but it does seem like there's been a legitimate sort of mentality shift with Derek Carr. I think he knows that, you know, the amount I say it or you know, obviously Gruden and Mayock aren't going to say it, but this is kind of his make or break year, you know, just with the way his contract is structured. Some decision has to be made in some form after this season, and so he's kind of just letting it go and letting it fly, and it's been working out so far.
It's really stunning how he's doing it. You know, he's there's guys open short, and usually in the past, he would take those short passes, but he's like, he's letting them go, and he's looking downfield. He's pump faking one way and trying to open up guys, throwing to the other, and, you know, he's making it a point to get these receivers balls deep, and, you know, he's getting pressured, and he's still holding on to the ball and making these throws. So it's really a stunning transformation this late into his career, and it's really, that aggression is bringing him up into that elite status of quarterbacks. If he can keep it up, you know, maybe not at this rate, but if he can still stay aggressive throughout the season, I really think, you know, we have to start talking about Derek Carr, the top 10 quarterback.
What's the big change this year? It's been the defense. They actually have a defense they have faith in. Yesterday, Derek kind of joked, like, it's okay to punt. Like, you know, you can take a shot downfield, it doesn't work, you can punt the ball and not think that you give the team, you know, 3 or 7 points right away. So I just think last year kind of lost all those horrible losses they had and down the stretch where the defense crumbled, whereas Derek had some really nice drives to win games or put the team ahead late, only to give the game right back when the defense got in the field. So I do think that you see the confidence that Gruden and Derek Carr have in the defense. They actually can take more chances. They can punt the ball. They can, you know, play the long game, whereas last year and the previous years was probably more desperation. Like, we got to protect the ball. We got to, like, you know, extend drive. We can't give them the ball back because we're going to lose. And I think that, and they did, you know, 3 or 4 times late last year.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, the argument for the pro-car people has always been give him a good defense. And, you know, there's the other argument that there are elite quarterbacks that have been able to elevate their teams without good defenses. So there's a fine line that you draw with Carr. I mean, he obviously is not in that quite top tier where it doesn't matter the circumstances around him. But I mean, I think for us who have watched him a long time, you've always known he's a really good quarterback. You know, the idea of the Raiders trying to go out and go another route has always been, okay, sure, who the hell are you going to get that's going to be much better? And I mean, when the ideas of, you know, a Tom Brady becoming available or an Aaron Rodgers becoming available, I mean, those are generational quarterbacks that if you don't explore the opportunities, you're probably doing your team a disservice. But for the most part, I mean, it's been funny as we've gone into every draft, right? And, oh, they're looking at this quarterback. And I mean, the idea of John Gruden going and drafting a rookie quarterback to be his Derek Carr replacement never, I think, has really been realistic because it's just, Gruden doesn't have a history of being able to draft a quarterback, especially like a late round quarterback and turn him into a gem. That's just not what he's done. I mean, you look at his success the first time with the Raiders, it was with a guy in Rich Gannon who you kind of needed a fresh start and needed to kind of have a career resurgence. And he did.
Yeah, I think John wants experienced guys who can, you know, make adjustments to line of scrimmage, you can know the playbook forward and backward and kind of discuss with him the different possibilities and read defense really well. And I think, one of the reasons he kept Derek on the last few years and because Derek's had a high floor. Like the ceiling was always a question, but now the floor was always like, you know what? There's much worse out there than Derek Carr. Like if we get rid of Derek Carr and go get somewhere else, we're really rolling dice to the guy that might be worst. I think what we've seen the last couple of years is that ceiling is starting to push higher. I think they've worked on Derek running with his feet more, getting out, you know, out of the pocket, making plays, extending plays, letting plays develop down the field, taking more shots on deep ball. So I think that ceiling is now starting to push higher and higher the more he plays with John. I think that's why. It's a big reason why they're 3-0.
Gruden's not the easiest coach to play for as a quarterback either because he wants to put in a high-volume offense as in, you know, you're going to have to memorize 200 plays in the game plan, at least 200, you know, just based on listening to other coaches that have worked for Gruden talk. And not every quarterback's going to be able to handle that type of game plan, but Derek Carr is a very intelligent quarterback, and he can handle that type of volume, and he can handle adjusting those plays at the line of scrimmage. I think we have to give Gruden some credit because I think he's really pushed Carr to work on the things that have been weaknesses in the past, like his ability to play under pressure and his aggression, like we talked about. And, you know, with some continuity, this is his third year in offense, and he really understands what Gruden's trying to do. And, I think this is part of what Mark Davis envisioned when giving, you know, Gruden a 10-year contract, is he wanted continuity for Carr. And now it looks like they have that strong coach and quarterback relationship that they could build on for a long time.
I think Mark Davis just loved Gruden.
I was going to say, like, I don't think for the Carr fans out there saying he needs a solid defense, I don't think that's such a terrible ask. I mean, like, the defense was terrible for 10 years. Like, it should not be that way. Like, you should be able to build a team to at least get a decent defense out there. You know, he's not saying that he needs the 2000 Ravens or anything like that, but I don't think that was a crazy ask. But, you know, just looking solid on both sides of the ball, or at least solid on both sides of the ball, you know, for the first time in a long time, and then we're seeing the results.
All right, let's get to the mailbag here. We'll start with this one from Justin C. Do you think Gus Bradley's familiarity with the Chargers offense versus their familiarity with his defensive tendencies is more of an advantage for the Raiders or Chargers? You know, and I think we got to throw in some caveats here. Obviously, Bradley has faced the personnel, a lot of the personnel of the Chargers offense, but it is a new scheme. They've got a new coaching staff. you know, and for the Chargers coaching staff, I mean, that's a new coaching staff. So, you know, the offensive players kind of have an idea of the Bradley scheme. And the Bradley scheme has been around for so long that I think most people in the NFL are pretty familiar with it. But so, I don't know, what do you guys think? I mean, the idea with the different coaching staffs and, you know, the fact that there has been some turnover in the Chargers offense, especially up front with their offensive line. I don't know how much of an advantage there is either way.
It might help with, like, in terms of tendencies, in terms of Herbert and like what he might think he's going to do and what he's looking for in terms of his reads and progression. So that, I can see that helping. But you're right. It's definitely it's a lot has changed even in the past year. I think as far as them being ready for Gus, like you said, Gus, the defense is not super complex. It's like they're going to run different zones. And it's just a matter of how fast they're playing. They're playing a lot faster and a lot looser. And that's been the big difference for them. So, I mean, I guess you can try and prepare for the speed of the Raiders defense. But again, I don't think it's going to be a huge factor either way in this game.
To me, the biggest factor might be a guy like, you know, Casey Hayward. He's not going to be surprised by the velocity on a Justin Herbert pass. Herbert's a guy I think that until you go against him, you're not really sure kind of how that ball comes out. He's going to have a lot of experience. So he might be the guy that probably has the most advantage going into this game, that he knows what the ball's like coming out of that hand of Herbert. All right, question here from Jeremy P. What happens with Barber when Jacobs comes back? Has he earned a role where he comes in to start a couple series himself while also spelling Jacobs when he needs to come off the field? Are we just doing away with Kenyon Drake?
Because the other thing is Jalen Richard, he practiced this week for the first time since the season started as well. And so he's typically their third down back. And, you know, he's, you know, strong pass blocking running back. And he has a lot of trust with Carr in the passing game. And so, you know, I don't know if Barber is even, I think that's more so the struggle is like Richard or Barber when it comes to that third down back role.
Barber is, you know, he's played well, but when Jacobs comes back, I can't see him really. You know, maybe he gets three carries, but Jacobs is going to take a bulk of the carries. And, you know, they paid Drake a ton of money, so he's going to be the spell back. And then you have Richard, who could play third downs, and he's really good at pass blocking, too. It's hard to see where Barber kind of fits into all of that.
Yeah, I'll imagine all four of those guys being active, right?
No, they'll probably stash one on the practice squad. Like last year, they had, you know, theoretically in the squad all year long. It'll probably be a role for, I imagine, Barber. But, yeah, I mean, with Gruden, you never know. I mean, definitely, he's become a huge fan of Peyton Barber, though. His running style, that's, you know, he likes to, people say he gets too conservative at the end of the games. That's the kind of guy he wants to use in the fourth quarter is Peyton Barber, a guy who, like, gets a tough yards, keeps pounding, and gets, you know, a couple yards after contact, trying to run the clock down. So I'm not totally sold Peyton Barber's going to go away. I'm very curious to see what happens.
You didn't believe Gruden when he told you Peyton Barber was going to be the guy.
I ain't believe him either, shit.
I got one question here I'm going to use from Twitter from Shashi. He says, ask Vic why he keeps doubting Carr and picking against him again this week. Has he been hanging out with DeBo recently?
I don't think I've been doubting Carr. I think I'm definitely skeptical of the Raiders in general. I mean, I'm jaded. I've been doing this 11 years. I've seen a lot of bad things in my day. So it takes me a lot longer to jump on the bandwagon than everybody else, especially when I'm a big guy. He's good. But so I pick against them, but I pick them to cover the spread in a couple cases, so it's not totally me being a hater like other people. So I disagree. I'm not anti-car. I'm not a car stan, as they say, but I'm definitely somewhere in the middle, probably towards the higher end on that range.
All right. Since Josh was mentioning that question, we'll keep it going. We know Josh listens to these shows and loves getting mentioned here.
Josh Raven, loves hearing his name.
From Raven Q, DeBo seems to be nicer lately on Twitter. Was he just a frustrated Raiders fan all along, a sleeper agent? I think, you know, this is where I kind of give you the boring answer that you know, Josh loves stats. I think everybody knows that. He enjoys looking up stats. When a team's doing well, the stats tend to reflect more favorably on the team and the players. When a team's doing poorly, when they're losing, the stats tend to reflect more poorly on the team. Josh loves to lean in and find random stuff to be negative when he can. You know, Josh has fun with what he does. And but I mean, hey, when you're doing well, that's what the numbers are going to reflect generally.
I have a different take. I think Josh is an evil social media savant. You like realized he had taken the anti-car thing as far as when Derek called him out and they're laughing after that one game. And I think Josh realized, you know what? I got to turn this thing around 180. I have to go the other direction as fast as I can and to kind of get the maximum airtime or whatever, name dropping from his tweets. So I think Josh is, it's all been an evil plan on his part to promote his own brand.
All right. Question from Aaron B. At this point, do the Raiders regret drafting Cleland Furl over someone else like Devin White or Brian Burns? And why isn't he being used inside on pass rushing downs? I've heard that idea thrown around by people like Lincoln Kennedy and Ted. So, Ted, you're in good company there. Loving the new defense, but it's a shame that he doesn't seem to be a great fit anywhere. You got to just take what you're getting from the
team. Of course they regret it.
Of course they regret it. What are you talking about? Like, no, they're fine. Yeah, they're great with what we got out of our number. Of course.
He's the number eight defensive lineman, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Max Crosby has the most pressures in the league still out, I think. Like, Yannick Ngakoue is up there. I mean, they're getting some stuff from Carl Nassib and Solomon Thomas. And, I mean, there's not – both inside and outside, they're getting pretty good production right now. I mean, injuries can happen. You know, it's a long season, knock on wood, but or maybe some guys tail off as the year goes on. But, I mean, there's no reason to just throw him out there just because. I mean, I know he's making a lot of money, and, like, you know, it sucks to eat money and then not get much out of it. But, I mean, guys are playing well that are in front of him right now.
If they drafted Brian Burns, who a lot of people had way over Clinton Farrell's in their rankings, they would have had Brian Burns, Max Crosby, and maybe instead of spending that money on Ngakoue, they spend that money on a guy like Leonard Williams inside, and then that D-line's better. So, you know, like, of course they're going to regret drafting a guy that's like eighth on their depth chart, you know, number fourth overall. So it's, you know, it's just like these mistakes that have hurt the Raiders the past few years. And, you know, right now they're able to kind of get past it. But, you know, you just hope in the future that they could just stop reaching. So we'll see what happens.
To me, regret's a harsh word, man. I mean, it's funny, but maybe they're, like, they're hopeful that things get better in the long run. And I think, and again, they're drafting for depth. So I think he's probably the best, you know, number eight lineman.
Yeah, get the number eight.
In the league. Yeah. But, and he's trying. He's definitely still being, he's definitely, I think his spirits are up. He's trying to be, he plays like, 15 snaps a game. And I could use make some plays here and there. So I'm gonna go optimistic and kind of positive vibe. And they're hopeful that his potential somehow comes through the next couple of years.
I mean, I think as to the question of why you don't have him rushing inside on passing downs, I don't think he's better than Darius Filon. I don't think he's better than Quentin Jefferson. I don't think he's better than Solomon Thomas. I mean, he's not one of their best players. He's not one of their best players for that role. I mean, they have guys that are better than him. And, you got to give credit to them that they're kind of ignoring the draft status and just saying, we're going to go with the players that are better.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's definitely a thing we talk about a lot. It's like, definitely, John doesn't care. Gruden, you know, as long as we win, he doesn't care who they win with. I mean, he's not so bound to these guys going to play no matter what. And I think one of the reasons they kept talking about Klee's ability to play inside was because he wasn't getting it done outside. So they can't just say, you know what? Oh, we're screwed, man. We're freaking blew it. We're going to move on. They go, no, you know, we're going to move him inside. He's very, you know, versatile. He can do all this stuff. So that's just a nice way of saying, you know, the place we drafted him for, it wasn't working. We got to do something. We got to do something else. So now they got other guys to do that. So it's like, where does he fit in? And at this point, it's on the back end of the line.
But he's the best number eight defensive lineman in the league. Probably.
If that's the pull quote from this thing, I'm going to be pissed. I was trying to be nice. And it sounded a lot meaner than it was.
All right, prediction time, guys. Raiders, Chargers, the quote-unquote home game in L.A. I mean, this can be their first time in SoFi Stadium for the regular season with fans. Obviously, they went to SoFi preseason against the Rams and had a big following there. The first regular season game in the brand new stadium in L.A. with fans. We'll see what it's like. Who wants to go first?
See, like, I keep getting locked into this because we make our expert picks, like, almost immediately after the game's over Sunday. So, like,
we allow you to room. Deviate from your expert pick.
Yeah. No, I gotta stick with my word, man. Whatever I come through. But I'm gonna go with the Raiders this week. I have it being another like nail biter. I think I picked them. I'm gonna go with 28-27. I think, you know, they won a similar tight one without fans last year against the Chargers on the road. And pretty much all the games so far this year have been pretty tight. But I think their defense is, you know. You don't think you're going to shut down Herbert and that offense, but I think they'll make enough timely stops, you know, to kind of keep it from getting out of hand on that end. And then
You know, I think they should be able to run the ball pretty well. I mean, the Chargers have been the worst run defense in the league. So, and they're coming off of 140 last week. And so you would think the Raiders would be able to run the ball, especially if Jacobs plays. And maybe they don't have as many explosive passing plays with the nature of this Chargers defense. But I'm pretty confident in their offense at this point. And while I don't think their defense is going to, you know, play lights out against the Chargers, I think they'll be solid enough to make enough stops to end up pulling this one out.
I'm going to take the Raiders, too. I think with all the attention going to Derek Carr, player of the month, all that, I think you might see the Chargers go with similar game plan as what they did against the Chiefs. They're going to look at them similarly. They're going to, you know, see Darren Waller as the Travis Kelce that they want to limit the big plays. They're going to see Henry Ruggs as the Tyreek Hill that they're going to want to limit the explosives. They're going to do that same thing where they're going to dare the Raiders to run because the Raiders have not run the ball well. And I think this is the game where the running game does explode. I mean, yeah, Peyton Barber had a nice second half in week 3 against the Dolphins and got over 100 yards. But still, you know, it wasn't like they came out of the gates running the ball well. I think this is a game, especially if they get Jacobs back, that they do run the ball really well and maybe more of a pedestrian stat line for Derek Carr, maybe a 250-yard kind of day. But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't go for like 150, 160 yards on the ground and Raiders win it. We'll go 31-28.
I think the Raiders can pull this game off 34-31. But the one guy that I'd be scared to death of is Joey Bosa, because he could just wreck this game, especially with the weakness on the right side of the line and the injuries at guard. There are times where he's rushing inside a little bit more, too. Gruden has been pretty good at scheming up ways to stop some top pass rushers, and I think just him and Cable have been really good with their protection plan, so I think they might be able to find a way to limit him. But yeah, I mean, he's just the X factor that could just wreck this game for the Raiders. But if they could find a way to control him, I do think that they'll find ways to move the ball against this defense, and it's gonna be one of those games where whoever has the ball last is gonna win. But you know, I think the Raiders could pull it off 34-31.
Vic's gonna be the bad guy.
I was going to say, as the anti-car Raiders hater, my pick is obvious. I'm going to go with the Chargers 27-23. I think they've won despite O-line struggles. I think the O-line's not been great the first three games. I think that's going to be a problem. I'm not sold on the running game being able to break through this week. And obviously, we talked about how good Mike Williams has been. They don't have Isaiah Johnson anymore. Isaiah Johnson, the Mike Williams stopper, is no longer on the roster. That's a big hole. So
Isaiah Johnson is the X factor in this game.
He is. Exactly. I mean, look at
is he on a roster? Where's he at?
Test Mr. Film Watcher. You never mentioned this. We watched the film last year. Isaiah Johnson saved the game. Isaiah Johnson not on the roster anymore. So for that reason, I'm going with the Chargers.
With the Texans, huh?
27-23 Chargers. I apologize to all the Raider fans for my evil pick.
Damn, Vic said they can't run against the worst run defense in the league. That's tough.
Can they work out a trade with the Texans, bring back Isaiah Johnson? He's on the Texans. Is he on the actual team or the practice squad?
I'm not sure. I can't imagine he is. Yeah, it's gotta be a practice squad.
Practice squad. So sign. All you got to do is just flip Vic around to a Raiders win. It's sign Isaiah Johnson off the Texans practice squad.
Bring back Rodney Hudson, and then I'll change my pick. Those two things, I'll switch my pick.
I don't think Rodney Hudson's coming back. But he wanted out, guys. And if he asked for a trade, so he that actually killed me last week, because there's nothing you could do. He wanted out. Guys, Aaron Rodgers wanted out of Green Bay this offseason. Who's Aaron Rodgers playing for right now? Xavier Howard asked for a trade from the Dolphins. Who did Xavier Howard play for last week? I think the Dolphins.
I still think Andre James will be fine. He's not played well so far, but I think I get why he did it. He's a young guy trying to build a young line. So my concerns are more like in the Bosa end of things, how they're going to stop Bosa, I think. But I think it'll be a close game. Obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders won and we're 4-0. Do you know that I was looking at the I was trying to be not so negative. I looked at the possibilities. If they win this week and they win next week, so they're 5-0. No Raiders team has ever been 5-0, but the first team in the history of the franchise be 5-0, so that's also very possible.
If they go 4-0 entering that home game, welcome Khalil Mack to Vegas. Man, that place will be popping, and I mean they'll be favored in that game, and then could set up a fun matchup in Denver, and they got a chance to go on a roll. I mean, if they win this game, they got a chance to go on a nice little roll here. All right, guys, that'll wrap up this episode of State of the Nation. Look forward to talking to you on Tuesday morning is when we'll come at you with the post-game show after the Raiders get back on Monday Night Football. Two times on Monday Night Football in the first 4 weeks. That's pretty exciting for this organization. And if they can get another primetime win, they can really, they've been getting a lot of good positive attention so far. If they can get another primetime win, that'll keep going.
We're not doing the live midnight podcast in Koreatown? No? After the game?
No.
All right. I'll tell them we're not coming. I have big plans.
You could do a YouTube live post-game.
Me and Deshaun will be in Koreatown at midnight if you want to stop by.
I'll be there with you guys.
sweet. Come on, man. We'll make the dream happen.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you after the Raiders take on the Los Angeles Chargers.
Adios.